Welcome to Poet Runner. Today we have Steve Avey. Oh, crap. I forgot about that. Welcome to Poet Runner. Today we have Steve Avey talking about his body of work, and my co-host Richard Modiano will be leading the interview.
Well, Steve, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. And I wanted to start out with this passage from Charles Olson's Projective Verse. And this is I picked this because this is what I immediately get from your poetry and your prose. So the kinetics of the thing. A poem is energy transferred from where the poet got it. He will have some several causations. By way of the poem itself to, all the way over to, the reader. Okay. Then the poem itself must at all points be a high energy construct and at all points an energy discharge. So that is something that I really see in your work, and that's the kind of poetry that I personally really like. I mean, I like when the poet or the writer, the prose writer, is able to sort of zap me with their emotional energy and draw me in to what they're talking about, And that's something that I really see both in your prose and in your poetry. In fact, the first piece I wanted to ask about was the bus, which is a tour de force. And
thank you.
And it's so organic that it's hard to believe that you didn't think about. I mean, it just sort of flows and comes out, so it has this great organic quality. But I'm sure it must have been assembled. So my question is, just how did you put that together?
Well, the bus started off as a free write, kind of spontaneous construction, like the organic thing that you're talking about, a bus ride, kind of an enthusiastic portrayal of riding the bus for no other reason than my own joy of doing it. I mean, I can't even remember why I started it. I just started it on the typewriter back in the day, even. And I had like 50 pages, and then I just thought I would keep going and kind of just, kept going with the same, idea of just, narrating it kind of stream conscious, at each stop. Like, what does each stop represent for me? What are my memories there? What are my thoughts, experiences there? And, just kind of let the shape of it take, be formed by the bus stops. There was editing that went on. There are parts that I took out. I think, like, why did I take those out, now looking back on them? I don't know what happened to them, I did some moving things around and what have you. And, it's interesting. A lot of times the beginning of a piece like that really ends up being like the end. So a lot of the last chapter is actually how it started. It was this like high, salute to the whole ride. I'm just like, this really works better as a final orgiastic explosion.
And for our listeners, the bus is a single bus ride going from the eastern part of Los Angeles all the way to the western part of Los Angeles, all the way down to the ocean. And it's a single ride in a specific time frame, and everything happens. It's almost like the perhaps more exotic one. It's like Leopold Bloom walking through the streets of Dublin and seeing everything happen on that specific day in 1904, whatever day it was. July 6th, whatever day that was. And it certainly had that in it. And the prose is very lyrical. It's full of vivid images and particulars. And above all, like a bus ride, it moves, and you were moving through. You were moving through a specific landscape, and that landscape is like it's also cinematic too to me. I mean, you can see it happening. So it's really it's both. I would say it's avant-garde, and at the same time, it is an accessible avant-garde.
Yeah.
It's accessible avant-garde, and that's one of the great things about it. I mean, this is not like, it's a novel. You could say it's a Roman Aklef because it's about this particular guy on a bus ride, and all the things that he sees. But there is nobody is killed. There's no melodrama in it at all. It's observed daily reality, and it sort of enchants observed daily reality in the way that you lay it all out. So that's another thing that I liked about it.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to write. I mean, it's a little daring in that it was creative nonfiction, but it had a lot of personal. Just, I mean, I wrote it. I had no sense that this was going to be something that I would present. So there was like a real showing the ass, so to speak. And I was like, that was kind of the spirit, and it like became something. Even still, I tried to keep that spirit, and I would. As I worked on it, I just kind of wanted to get the street right. So I would take notes as I, drove down Santa Monica Boulevard for whatever reason and just make sure there were things that I was including. And, there was this one place at Normandy in Santa Monica that it was just so evocative. It was just this, little flower stand that used to be there. And they had these great, string of lights just, illuminating their stand. And, at night, it would just be this beautiful beacon in the middle of, kind of Santa Monica goofiness or, sketchiness. I was just trying to be, like you say, I think the Leopold Bloom thing is accurate. I mean, I really, obviously, Joyce is, it's a, it's an amazing piece of work. And but accessibility is not its thing, it's not... it's doing something else, but I just like to make work that people can kind of jump into, especially that book. You can jump into it at any place. There's no, there is a beginning and end, of course, but there's no narrative that you have to figure, have to pick up at the beginning to understand what's happening in the middle or the end. And there are no guns. I don't know. I just never wanted to put guns in anything.
Yeah.
Don't have a gun.
Well, scene and incident follows scene and incident, and that is the interest of the story. It's like, what is this guy going to see next? Who else is going to get on the bus? What's he going to see out the window happening there? So that is the...
That's cool.
That, I forget, some postmodern scholar analyzed the novel or created some taxonomy of it and said that there are these different codes, and the most important code is the hermeneutic code, which is, in other words, what happens next. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so, that
sounds like really freaky. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it does. I forget there were some other highfalutin terms that I no longer remember, but that one stuck with me.
Yeah.
There was some other one that referred to a cultural code. So, like when you mention a door. Depending on what culture you're from, that door is like a door that we're familiar with a handle, and you open it and it closes. Or it could be a sliding door in Japan where the door slides open instead of opens and closes like our doors, etc. But that's sort of beside the point. But this is, like we have this interest in the whole adventure. So
yeah. Well, it was,
and that book is available, right, Steve? I mean, I want to turn our listeners on to some of the things that we're going to be talking about, and I highly recommend that one.
Yeah, let me see where it's available. I know that it's available at the Battery Bookstore in Pasadena, fine used bookstore on Los Robles at Colorado, where you read, and Rafa, you did as well.
Yep.
So, I mean, back before the pandemonium.
Yeah.
All right, it's on Amazon. It's got 7 reviews.
Okay,
right.
There. There you go, listeners.
Yeah.
So there.
Who's selling
look
it on
for
Amazon?
It at, look for it at your independent bookstore first. And if your independent bookstore is not carrying it, ask them to look it up and order it for you. So, or can you can they order it directly from the press that published it?
Oh, no. Phony Lid does not do any publishing anymore. That's long gone.
It's too bad.
Saga. No, it'd have to. I mean, it looks like it's available on Amazon.
All right.
And you
well,
can get it for like a. Go to Battery Books if you guys are in Pasadena. It's a great place, you know, it's a real used bookstore.
And it's an independent bookstore. You know, it really is important to support the independent bookstores because they're the people who make room on their shelves for the really good stuff. You're not going to have 150 Stephen King titles crowding out everything else.
Yeah.
So, support your local independent bookstore. But let's turn to your poetry now. I know that there was a poem that always stuck with me because it was the subject is really interesting. And the title of the poem is Hail to the Things I Cannot See.
Yeah.
So maybe you could lay that one on us.
Yeah, I'm going to lay it on you. This was written, I believe, Albert Goldman, I think, was the poet that I was listening to at Beyond Baroque many years ago. And he had a poem that evoked the invisible. And, you know, this is my own kind of version of that. And, you know, so how much of what we're dealing with, you know, what we experience is not even part of the visible world. You know, it's this other area that we're surrounded by, the interior, exterior. So hail to the things I cannot see. Hail to thee, O unseen things. Hail, stellar contraction, shaping dust into a sun, atoms waiting in darkness to begin their fusion, blooming solar fire, the electricity chewing across the wires in the wall, neuron signal causing the heart to beat, hormonal impulse causing pubic hair to grow, synaptic exchange causing the mind to change. I cannot see any of you, but I know you are there. Hail, O ovum tumbling out of the fallopian waiting room into the clean blood darkness alone, waiting for brother's sperm. O seed generated from testicular emptiness, looting and rioting in the vaginal night, I salute all you unseen makers. O heartbeat accelerated by smell of shampoo that reminds of junior high school French kissing, first touching vagina, exciting stink, who knew it would smell like that? O sorrow held in chest cavity upon the smell of incense that parents burn to create atmosphere during their alcoholic stupors, apartments of blackout rage while Charlie Parker's Tunisian horn blew holes into the night. O rain of tenderness falling on face brought on by memory of candle making with mother on the porch of the apartment, colored wax dripped into shapes carved in sand. Hail to all of you, the invisible evokers of time past and things that happened and shouldn't have and should have and had to, but what do I know? O wind keeping seagulls aloft, squawking and hovering over mine and my daughter's hot dogs down at Santa Monica Pier. O gravity that holds the trees up and my bones together. Web of sun stellar radiance that wraps this earth, spheres, mud, and bones in perfect location for the growing of our brains and other cosmic windows. O sunlight tinkerer of soul and mind, creating my waking and seeing with your clear yellow light, waking me with your rising, pulling me to sleep when you go, my body like the oceans and their tides. I am you, all of me, I believe. O sorrow, endless holes in the sky and in the heart, you are there again. Purple thing, river-like, deliverer, brokenly smiling the way to light. O silence, kindest hush of mind and time, loving terminus of all, the sky appears now. Silence, folding and blooming sounds of airplanes passing through clouds, seventh graders whispering in the back row, heartbeats like bubbles coming to the surface of the water, all rising from silence. all stone and gaseous vapor and vision laying upon silence, love laying upon the silence, sunrise out of silence. Oh, hail, hail, invisible things.
Yeah, that's a terrific poem, Steve. I mean, there's the music of the poem is the first thing that struck me. And really, one of the weaknesses of free verse is the lack of music in a lot of free verse. And you have music
yeah.
in your poems. And that is, and really, the music is the thing that moves you. I mean, that moves the images which carry the ideas. And, you know, you can still have good poems that are simply the images without the music, but really the best poems have this music in them, for me. And we have this, right? We have this in this poem. And the sort of listeners, a kind of an irony is this. These are things that you cannot see, but you can feel. And you can feel these things. When you read the poem, you will be able to feel these things that you cannot see. So, you know, that's a sort of another level of appreciation that a reader brings to a poem when you really get into it, and when a poem draws you into it like this one does.
Well, thank you. It's a lovely piece. I was happy to be able to be part of it, be part of the making, you know. But, yeah, just the, I don't know, just the power of the things, the unseen things that, you know, move through us. You know, we're kind of this radio and playing all these stations from the past and just in the moment. You know, it's a gorgeous thing being a human being.
Yeah, and it's in this poem. I mean, I'm looking for a word that connotes optimism, but it's not exactly optimistic. It's rather appreciation of what is. It's like a love
yeah.
and appreciation of what is. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what
you know, it's marvelous.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, be humble before this great creation. It's, I mean, you know, I don't know, optimistic is right. I don't know if I don't know if optimism would define what I'm doing, you know, but it's not, you know, pessimistic. It's not like, you know, just being alive is an amazing thing. And, I think that's what poetry is, maybe at its heart in a lot of ways. Even when it's, you know, about difficult moments, it's really, you know, celebrating being human, and that it's a powerful state of consciousness, you know.
That's one of the things that poetry can do for you is to direct your attention to that. A lot of entertainment is just escapism to take you away from yourself. And this is, but poetry brings you back to yourself to see what is really there, to see what is good, to see what's valuable.
Yeah. See what is good. See what is valuable. You know, that's beautiful. Wish I'd said that. No, that was good.
Well, you did say it in the poem, though. I mean, this is just an abstract.
You said it in the poem.
It's in the poem, so that's why the poem is better than any abstract commentary on it.
Yeah.
That's just my simplification. That's just my gloss on it.
It's a beautiful gloss.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Lovely gloss.
Do you have anything that's fairly recent in front of you that you could lay on us?
Do I have something that's recent? I have things that are so recent that I can't even read them.
Oh, okay.
I literally, like, I can't understand what I wrote. But I'm kind of joking. I'm not totally joking. But I also have things that are not totally recent. Let me see. I have notebook stuff. Do you guys want to hear raw notebook business?
Sure, let's hear that.
Sure.
I think that would be of interest.
What is going on here? Oh, wow. Backyard. My writing looks so good on this page. It's crazy. Jeez Louise, I must have been... All right, let's... I don't know. It's so raw. You guys might get offended. It's how dare you bring something to us that is not really... Let me see, full moon tonight. I'm full of love. I say that every time I sit down to write. It's true. I have papers to grade, etc. I will figure that out later. Everyone gets an A. Why in the world do you get so sad, so low? The sky is right there telling you about possibility in the future, in the past. The very largeness of now expanding piece by piece into everything. Everything is here right now. Everything is here right now. Everything is here right now. You feel that? It's everything. I'm preaching for the doorway to be opened. I'm preaching for the hallway to be clear. I'm preaching for the knowing and the lesson to speak handfuls of Hosanna right into the wombs. We all got wombs in our teeth. So speak them birth words. Love, baby. Child, begin. Once more, forever. Yes. It's humid, okay day. Rain came and broke the 100 degree plus a day, week long, 10 day heat wave, unreal. The world is wet and nicely warm. Stillness over everything. Bird sound and stillness. Plane flies and stillness. Mountains, oh San Gabriel Mountains, my love stands in stillness. Stands so still and loving in stillness. My wife sighs in the bathroom in stillness. The neighbor exclaims in her kitchen in stillness. The dog barks down the hill, distant in stillness. Oh, love, my heart, chest full of you. You there, like that, like heat in the air, soft water, warm breath on my everywhere, chest, back, and neck, legs, and source stuff. You there in stillness, informing me of world, of wordless intelligence, the divine data, pink dot of Philip K. Dick's truth. But here, in the warm vapor of the day, after heat wave breaking rain, any and the world's silence, and the world's silent appreciation of being here in stillness. I wonder how many pages of these journals over the years, certain celebrations of stillness, the sounds of the now, the catalog of dog barks and distance and airplanes and clouds, birds chirping next door in the loquat trees, the rain dripping off the honeysuckle, or the backyard squirrel, the sweet ringtones of years, the levels of electric cascading tiny thin. Now I hear two levels. Oh, now I'm talking about the ringing in my ears. A so-called static, a thin light blue, wary tone, and thicker gray cloud, a thin one just changed for a moment and got louder, and now it is recessed. They are with me to the end of this body, aspects of outward hearing loss, no doubt, but the cadence of our own electrical machinations, the parts of me shooting electricity across the wires, the working of cells, to hold up the walls of veins, the blood itself moving through the canals and crevices of the body, the change of thought and heartbeat moving across the wires of the machine. That is what I believe I am hearing in the thin-pitched frequencies ringing in my ears. One is a ship flying in the sky. The other is an ocean coming to the shore. There are words that I have right now. There are others out there, but these are the ones I know. So that is my most recent piece of writing.
Well, that's that again. There is the music in that poem and the energy of it, and as you read it, it was like as Philip Whalen describes somebody's poem, a record of the mind moving. And not only a record of the mind moving, but engaging with the outside world, which, you know, impacts and impinges upon our consciousness, and we process it in different ways. You know, the unpleasant things we push aside, we want to cling to what's nice and pleasant and make it go on and on. It doesn't do that, but I could see a lot of that in the poem. I mean, when you polish this up, you know, just exactly what process will you take toward it? It sounds really great as is, even. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, a lot of times, I mean, there's always a challenge of polishing and killing.
Yeah.
Or and well, of polishing and not, you know. All right, here, the challenge is, how do you take it and maintain that beautiful organic moment of, you know, spirit and word coming together in your experience? And, you know, because there's something in the moment that is evoked that is really what it's all about. And being able to maintain that, even though, you know, you're working on editing or clarifying things, is really the challenge. So I think, you know, for me, what I would do is I'm just going to, first of all, just copy it out of my notebook and, you know, and see what I think. You know, maybe clarifications, I think, are probably the most important thing. You know, making, if there's missing words, you know, that need to be put in there, or if there's missing words that need to be left out, or, you know, because a lot of times what I try to, I like to do that kind of wordplay where you're, you know, just, you know, throwing words together. Like I got that at the beginning. I think, you know, what's interesting on reading this piece over, the first page sounds like a complete poem. You know, it ended with yes, and I thought that by itself was a piece. You know, so, you know, that's the kind of thing. I think looking through it and just seeing, you know, seeing what has that music, like you're saying, and really speaks, you know, kind of accurately about the moment that it's in. And, you know, trying to honor that. Because the thing is this is all gifts, right? I mean, you know, I think what we, when we, to be engaged in the poetic project is really just to respond to this kind of sense of value within your own experience. And that is, you know, constant, right? So sharing what, you know, sharing that sense of value is the, you know, is what it's, is really what we're trying to do. And I think, you know, seeing that kind of the living experience of that, that value, is what is so moving. So I don't know. I mean, I, some of the writers I like are really trying to live in their words, you know, and they're not just like writing about something that happened or, but it's like the, you know, it's the kind of that action painting vibe where the paint on the canvas is the experience, is the painting moment. I mean, obviously the paint on the canvas is always the painting, but it's like, you know, the abstract idea is like, if this is, I'm celebrating the moment here, this is what is real. And I think, you know, what moves me in poetry is when poems have that ability, you know, or any kind of art really.
Yeah, and you know, it takes us back full circle to the beginning of our conversation when I read that piece from Olson from his essay Projective Verse, where the poet has this energy and has to, and you know, the poem lives when this energy is moving and is being transmitted to the reader, that's what I really like about your work, Steve. You have this in everything that I've read. And to me, that's something to really aspire to. I know that these days, you know, a lot of people go to workshops, which are good and bad in a way. And to me, the bad part of the workshop is somebody might have something that's very fresh and ragged, but the guy running the workshop says, you've got to fix that up, you've got to take this and that out, and then you end up with McPoem, and it gets lost. So, you know, it's a thin line. I mean, you have to know craft, but at the same time, you can't submit to craft all the way through. I mean, if there are some rough edges, so much the better.
Yeah.
To me.
Well, I think, you know, that's a good question of like, when does the craft become the killer of the ragged beautiful? And when is the ragged beautiful getting in the way of its own, you know, idea?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's always the challenge, I think. But I just am really marveling now so much in like the secret moment of poetry, you know. And I think that's, you know, I haven't published anything in 10 years. you know, part of it's just being a busy guy, mm-hmm. you know, teaching, and part of it's, you know, teaching high school English. And, you know, part of it is, like, you know, spending too much free time playing online chess. I'll be honest about that. I'm getting better. I'm getting better at chess. And then the other part of it is also really just enjoying the secret, you know, world of my own, you know, kind of fascination and creation. You know, just living in the notebook and letting that be, you know, the beat explosion of love in the here and now. But,
well,
hey, if there's any publishers who are interested out there,
I was going to say, publisher listeners, pay attention now. Steve is a terrific writer, a terrific man of letters, because he hits on all genres, you know, poetry, prose, creative nonfiction even. We didn't get to that, but, you know, these are the kind of voices that I know there's an audience for these voices. I mean, I certainly enjoy this kind of work, and a whole lot of other people do. So, and it looks like we are about out of time. We could go on, but again, we've been talking to Steve Abey, poet and prose writer. We talked about his sort of novel or Romanek Clef, The Bus. Lay some other titles on us. I know there's Johnny Future's another great one.
Yeah, Johnny Future, that's a straight-up novel. There's Great Balls of Flowers, from which, you know, Hail to the Invisible Things came from. You know, and
that's
then,
a poetry collection, Great Balls of Flowers. That's just
yeah, Great Balls of Flowers is a Right Bloody poetry collection. Came out about
okay,
10
well,
years
there,
ago.
You can get that one. You can get that one from Right Bloody Press. They are there.
Yeah, that one, I think it's, you know, they probably have to dig in their whatever you call it.
Yeah.
The archive a little bit,
yeah.
But you know, he's. I mean, that's it's still. It's, I believe it's still, you know, accessible, and that's also on Amazon, for those of you who are doing that. And then there's way back in the day, King Planet. That was back in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
from Incommunicado Press out of San Diego.
Well, so I guess.
Yeah.
If you can find that, well, look, listeners, just put Steve Abey's name in your search engine, Steve Abey poet, Steve Abey author,
and
you will find stuff, I guarantee, and it'll be worth the effort, absolutely worth the effort.
Yeah.
So
but, you know,
anyway,
but for real, if there's somebody who's interested in publishing stuff, I would like to know so that I can, like, I don't know, I got so much stuff that I have just, like, poured onto this machine and on these pages. I think it may be a little...
Well, you
know,
as they like to say, you're sitting on a gold mine, Steve.
Yeah, I just got to get down to business.
Yeah. Again, we've
yeah.
been talking to Steve Abey. Thank you for your time, and I really love this conversation.
All right, man. It's great to hear you, brother. Glad you two are doing well. I'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
All right, take care.
Okay.
And now we have our runner for the show today, which will be Lynette, and... She knows I can't pronounce your last name. How are you?
Hi, yes, it's Patanitchi.
See, I would have said something completely different, and I would have messed it up, so I just avoided the whole thing. How are you doing? First of all, how's the training? Are you training for anything, or are you just running to run?
I just ran the Adirondack Half Marathon on Sunday, and I am training for the Philly Half now.
How was the half marathon?
It was actually really good. Beautiful course. The second half, anything past the 6 mile mark, was definitely some nice rolling hills, straight through to the end. But you know, you couldn't beat the scenery. We got lucky with the weather. It was supposed to downpour in the middle, and it didn't. So it turned out really nice. It didn't start raining until we were in the finish line festival. There was a lake to jump in. There was a beer tent. It was overall a really nice race.
Sounds nice. You said the scenery. I think I'm starting like half marathons. There are more trails than actually running half marathons in the street, because I did the Rose Bowl one, and it was like, I'd rather, you know, actually do a trail half marathon than anything in the city anymore.
Yeah, I'm still not too keen on trails. I'm going to stick to hiking. I would definitely roll an ankle if I tried some trail running. But just being up in the mountains and around the lake, and we got a nice change of scenery halfway through as well. The first part, we were coming around the lake. There was a lot of homes around there, and there was really long driveways. So people were driving down their driveways and kind of setting up camp at the bottom. Some of them even had fire rings down there. And they were just cheering for us. And this is a small hometown race, so it's not very many people. But then the second half was up just Route 9. So we got a little bit more, like rocks on the side. We could still see the lake. But we got a nice change of scenery. But overall, it was just gorgeous.
I love runs that have scenery. I think tomorrow I'm going to go run by the beach just so it could be a change of pace so I can actually see the ocean.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And, scenery means a lot. I think sometimes changing your scenery helps with motivation.
I agree. I don't know. I felt very comfortable when I was running. I was struggling down in the city for a while for whatever reasons, but I kind of just settled into it and just was like, you know what, this is where we are right now. And I had things to look around at. I had headphones in just because I knew it was going to be a small race, but I still could hear out of one ear, and it was quiet. It was serene. It was just kind of like one of those races where you kind of just, you're just coasting by. It's comfortable.
I like you said small race, because, I mean, for some people, a half marathon is a big deal, but like as you progress to marathons and to other races, everything else becomes small. It's funny that you said that. You called it a small race.
Small in regard to people. So there was only 300 half marathoners and maybe about 100 marathoners.
Wow.
Overall,
not to change.
Still a half marathon. It's still a healthy distance.
I just did an ultra race, which is like 31 miles, my first one. And it was like, I think there was only 300 people doing the whole ultra, while more people did the half of the 25
yeah.
miles. I mean,
oh,
25K.
Awesome.
I don't even know what 25K is. But it was interesting. You learn a lot about yourself when you run that much. It's like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. I even think of doing this. But the funny thing is you're going to end up doing it again. It's like, fuck. Makes no sense. But like,
yeah.
One part, sure. What are you doing to train for the marathon? How are you training? Have you changed anything, or do you have a set way that you train?
When I train for a half, it's pretty, it's a little bit lighter. I think we're going to try and kind of just build on what I was working on. Definitely adding some extra Pilates days in there, so adding some more strength. But I think keeping a lot of the running the same.
Someone told me to switch my training to 10 to 5 to 10 to 5, so I've been doing that. And every once in a while, adding to the 10, but with the 5, I've been doing speed running, where I've actually managed to get my 5 miles into, my quickest has been 37 minutes, but I forgot I could run fast until I, you know, started doing the 10 miles, then the 5 miles, then the 10 miles. You know, so that's
Some pretty cool track workouts on my schedule. I like the build that we do on the track, and then I have my hill days and then the easy day and then a long run.
Well, I like that you said hill days, because a lot of people, you know, when you do a half marathon, you don't realize how many hills they stick in there.
Yeah. I thought this one was going to be a little bit flatter. I didn't actually read the race description until about a week prior. But going into it, I knew there was probably going to be some hills. But, you know, I got through them.
Well, it's interesting, because when I do half marathons and I see the hills, and then I notice, you can tell who hasn't trained with hills, because they're the ones walking up the hills, and the people who are used to hills are just running up the hills, you know, passing the guys, people walking, and you can tell they haven't really done that much hill training.
It was
after a while, you get used to it.
I was surprised that I got through them, but they weren't very steep hills. They were just long rolling hills. So it was a steady incline. It wasn't going straight up. So I think that that helped because I knew each of them had a pretty solid downhill.
I hate downhill, actually. I mean, have you ever – I'm always afraid if I go too fast at downhill that I'm going to trip and start rolling.
Yeah, definitely. I have to sometimes be careful with that. If it's early on in the race, I'm good. But I try and practice control. I do practice control, but I definitely make sure I lean into it and let the downhill take me and do what it needs to do so I'm prepared again for the next uphill.
Now, during the ultra, I saw a couple people bite it going downhill too fast. And it's like, that looks painful.
Yeah,
I'm glad I'm going downhill slow. Like, I mean, I've seen people who look like they're naturals and they're used to it, but, you know, one little misstep and they'll fly, and it's not, you know, the hills they were running. It's painful. I don't want to fly. I like being able to finish the race. I'm not like being all beat up by the time I finish. So,
exactly.
I hardly ever asked this, what shoes do you prefer to run in?
I race in ASICS Metaspeed Sky.
Huh. I got some ASICS gel kitados. Those work for me.
I race in the super shoe, but I don't train in the super shoe. I have Kayanos, and I have another pair that I got recently.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I've actually put three pairs for one pair for 5K, one pair for trail running, and one pair for half marathons and marathons, so I don't wear them out.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the shoes I got lying around are for training, you know, and switch them off, and because I want to have good pair for the marathons,
I read somewhere you're mostly supposed to wear your super shoes for races, not necessarily training in them, because they do wear out rather quickly. So I'm trying to hold on.
Oh, God. And shoes aren't cheap, and it's like, you know, once you get a good shoe, and it's like, oh, man, it wore out already. But no, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, I made sure to read up on them before I bought them, and that was something specific that they had said about those specific types of shoes, whether it's the Vaporfly, Next Percent, the ASICS version, and Hoka version, that they're really meant for racing, and that they do wear out.
I use Hoka for trail runs. I wear Hokas for trail runs. I mean, I like those, but there's a new something called Ultra I want to try for trail runs. It's supposed to be really good, but problem is I have a flat foot, so everything, when I'm buying the shoe, I have to mention that so they can specifically get shoes for me so I don't get the wrong shoe.
I haven't had run into any issues like that.
It kind of sucks. There's certain shoes you can't buy with my foot because like, they won't work right, or they'll hurt the foot. So it's kind of like, I got to get what fits. So what was your time for the half marathon? Did you get the time you wanted? Were you happy with how fast you were going?
No, it wasn't what I wanted, and it wasn't anything special. But it worked for what the course was, what the training was. I would say it was probably on par for what I should have been expecting. My actual goal race for the fall is Philly, so we weren't expecting anything big out of this anyway. It was mostly find the base and see what we need to do between now and November.
And that's kind of what I'm doing with the Long Beach and the Big Bear Marathon, because I'm going to do another Ultra December, and I'm probably just, you know, using those as like buffers before I do another 31-mile race, just so, you know, I can, you know, see how I do and get comfortable with, you know, distance again.
Yeah, we're definitely going to, you know, base the rest of my training on from this race going into November.
Okay, when I train, I just train to run. I don't, with my distance, I don't try to get PRs. When you train for your distance, are you trying to get a PR, or are you just training and just trying to maintain, you know, running?
When I'm running races or when I'm training?
When you're training.
If I'm training for something, I'm going for a PR. I'm going for time. I'm competitive. Oh. If I'm gonna pay to run a race, I'm gonna race it. The PR that I'm trying to break is from 2014, so it will probably take another year or two to actually break it. But I'm just trying to come close to kind of build up that motivation to surpass it.
Yeah, my best PR was in 2005, so I don't know if I'm going to catch that one again. But it'd be nice if I could.
I anticipate catching it eventually. I think next year is probably a more realistic goal, but I do want to try and come as close as I can and hold on to that through the winter, through the spring, and through the summer, so next fall I can actually go after it.
Yeah, when I go into a marathon, I want a fast time, but it's like I've gotten to the point where I'm just, you know, I want to finish, I want to have a good time, but it's like I don't want to, you know, hurt anything because I have battered my body for lifting weights so much that it's like my back's a little out, so I can't push too hard, and it's kind of like, but I want to get I definitely want to get my PR again. That's kind of like.
I'm really good about adding in strength training and doing Pilates and yoga, so I'm not too concerned about that part.
Yeah. I got a little carried away, and that's how I messed up my strain in my back. So, when they pour ice on you in races sometimes, I can feel my back knees inside to stop them from pouring ice on me. It's kind of like, oh, it feels good, but my back's about to, like, you know, nope. So I told them to stop, and I kept going. But, yeah, I know. It's like you learn and you live when you do stuff. I mean, I'm not giving up the strength training, but I'm being more careful with it now. But it helps. I mean, I've noticed when I've been doing squats and stuff for my legs, my speed's gotten faster on my speed runs. So that definitely helps.
Yeah, I'm focused on my core, which is why I do a lot of Pilates. And then yoga, I really enjoy yoga. So I incorporate that in. But, yeah, I mean, both of those things help me tremendously. I also snowboard, so I'm going into snowboard season, so I need that strength for sure.
I respect the Pilates and the yoga because, I mean, I should do more for my core, but every day I try to do at least at least about 100, 200 things for my stomach just to, you know, get it built up. But it's kind of like I just have to push and make sure I do it, but it's kind of like some days you get lazy and you skip and you feel bad. I'm pretty sure that's not you because you're sounding pretty competitive.
No, I mean, I skip days. I definitely, you know, I don't do everything that's on my schedule, but I try. You know, life gets in the way very easily for me, so I get what I can get done, and then I just move on from it. I don't dwell on it. Like, if it didn't get done today, well, something will get done tomorrow. And I try not to be so specific on, you know, the weeks. I try, and sometimes if things are going pretty rough and I need to start skipping days, if I end up doing a long run on a Sunday, I'm like, oh, my God, it's not the first day of the week or whatever. I'm just like, you know what? That's fine. Now we're just going to, like, you know what? You did a long run today. Either shake it out tomorrow or that's your rest day and just keep it going versus treating it as week versus days. So if it's every 7 days for a long run, whatever, that's fine. However that ends up being, it might not look like an actual week on the calendar.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right now I'm happy with the 5-10, you know, the court, the way I've been training, because it's actually, me some strength in my running, which I've noticed. Eventually, I'm going to try to push for like 15 to 20 miles at least once a week, at least 20 once a week, just so, you know, build up endurance for the longer runs. I mean, you know, just being able to keep going.
I do my long runs on Friday morning.
Well, what time do you get up in the morning to run? Because I run about 6 or 7 after I finish at the gym.
My schedule changes based on the time of year. So right now I'm kind of back on a getting out of the door at around 6:15 a.m. when it starts getting a little bit lighter. But during the summer, my alarm goes off at 4:45.
That's nice. I used to love running, like, before the sun came up by the beach, because seeing the sunrise is always nice. You know, I always enjoyed that.
Yeah. I've done that once or twice.
Can't do it. Because of work schedule, I can't do that as much as I used to, but I love, you know, catching the sunrise. Mm-hmm. You know, I get the endorphins really kick in when I run. That's what actually one of the big addictions of running to me is getting that endorphin fix from running that I miss if I don't run. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think a lot of other things also give me endorphins, and I'm pretty content with not throwing all of my eggs in my running basket anymore like I used to. But I do enjoy an early morning run, and I don't think that's anything that will ever change. I still think for as long as I can, my alarm will go off at 4:45 in the summer, and I'll still be up and out when the light comes up in the winter.
I'm thinking, for me, running in the morning before work helps me center and relax before, like, the rest of the day. You know, I think it's a good way to start the day.
Oh, yeah. It gives me less anxiety because I know that it's already done, and I don't have to do it later.
Well, you know, I've heard reports that it helps depression, too, like, helps you stop being depressed when you run. So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about that. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, there's a lot of... I believe there's quite a few studies on that.
Well, yeah, no, it's like a lot of things that it's beneficial and it helps. And the only thing I hate about, you know, being healthy, it's not cheap being healthy when you're trying to eat right, you know?
Yeah, for the most part, I would say so. It depends on what you're grabbing. I think I'm pretty lucky. We have a lot of nice... fruit and veggie stands in the city. My friend has a discount to a meal service for me. So I think I have access to a lot of things that make it a little bit more affordable depending on, you know, where you go.
So I just started doing oatmeal and 2 boiled eggs in the morning just because I read somewhere oatmeal is good for runners. So I'm like, okay, I'll try it. And, you know, I'll try anything to see, you know, to help, you know. And also I heard eating oranges after running helps too. So I'm just doing anything sound. Oranges, like, you know, straight orange after you run. Actually, during the ultra, they had a lot of oranges and a lot of watermelons for us to eat as we ran.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I started loving oranges and watermelons right from that run because it's kind of like, I like this. No wonder they held here. I never understood the eating part of running to that big race. You need to put something back in.
Yeah, you need to fuel up. I mean, I'm not surprised about oranges because that's what you have at halftime. Like when you're a kid and you're playing soccer, that's like your halftime snack that everyone brings for the team. So that I'm not surprised about.
The thing that did surprise me was pretzels at the end of runs, but they turned out to work for me. That's one thing. One of the couple runs, they've always had pretzels at the end of the runs. I think it's the salt.
Yeah, my recovery bags always have pretzels in them. I don't think I've ever gotten a recovery bag that didn't.
Yeah, but I wasn't used to that. And then I think the first time that happened is when I did my first trail run was like 3 or 4 years ago. They had a whole bunch of pretzels afterwards. And I was like, this actually tastes good and actually feels good. I wouldn't have fought it. But then again, you know, I mean, I didn't know anything. I mean, I've ran a lot for most of my life, but I never, you know, knew the science or, like, to get the things that you need to, like, keep yourself going. I was just running. But now I'm becoming more serious about it because I want to do all these marathons and I want to do all these races. So, yeah, so it's become more serious to me. So if the marathon that's coming up, how prepared do you feel for it right now?
Well, it's a half. I'm only running the half.
That's something. That doesn't matter. I mean, but how do you feel about it?
I feel good. I mean, I got our test base race in, so I feel good about having, you know, a month and a half to train.
I've actually interviewed people who do, like, three marathons in 3 days. It's kind of like that amazes me. Because there's really no time to recover.
Yeah, I don't think I would ever do that.
I don't know if I could. I mean, but I'm amazed by it. And this other person I interviewed just did a 100-mile run and, you know, and documented it. It took her 28 hours to finish it, but she did it.
I'm amazed
what the human... It just amazes me what the human body can do. You know, and I do agree on mindset. I mean, when you're focused on a race, I know you probably have a mindset of, like, what's going on in your head while you're running, and your focus is probably pretty much, you know, dead on and ready to get where you need to go. You know, I think focus has a lot to do with it, and mindset. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's like, you know, sometimes I get up in the morning and I'm like, all right, yeah, let's, I'm ready to run. And then I get outside and I'm like, eh, let's not. And I go back inside. So, mindset's important. But sometimes just also allow that.
Yeah, no, I do the stall. I mean, no matter what day it is, I mean, I'll spend like, I'm done at the gym, but I'll stall for like 20 minutes, you know, like, oh, I gotta make a new playlist to run with. Or something stupid that's not really necessary, but I'll just, you know, goof around. Then when I'm finally running, I'm like, why did I do the stall? And every day I always stall, but then I wonder why the hell I stall, because as soon as I start running, I'm happy. But I always stall. And I have no rhyme or reason for it, but I'm always stalling. I don't get it.
I mean, I think most runners do that sometimes. But if I go outside, if I'm ready for a run, then I go outside and it's just not happening. I'll just go home or I'll go for a walk. I don't speed it up. I don't force it. It's really pointless to force something like that.
Well, I know. I think last Thursday after I did a heavy leg workout and I was going to do a speed run, I realized, you know, maybe doing the speed run after a leg workout is not a good idea because my legs just told me, that, nope, not happening.
Yeah.
But if my mindset was for a distance run, I probably could have done the distance run easy, but my head was set for a speed run, and I just said, fuck it, and I just, you know, went back to the gym, went home, and just, you know, did the speed run the next day and realized, you know, no more heavy leg days on speed runs, because it just, you know, too pumped up, and it's like, it hurt, but I don't know why. The funny thing to me is I can run 10 miles after, you know, maxing out my legs, but I can't do a speed run when my legs are, like, you know, been worked out. I guess
you want fresh legs for a speed workout. You want to get the most out of that.
So after this half marathon, do you have anything else planned for next year? Do you have any goals for next year?
I'm going to go after that half PR that I want to break. Otherwise, I'm not too sure about next year because none of the lotteries are open yet. So I have to wait
to find out. I'm not clear about the lotteries. What do you need to do for lottery? What races are you
for Chicago and New York. Chicago, New York,
okay.
London, Tokyo, all of the big races, Berlin.
Wow, yeah. See, this is what, I mean, I love that you got those goals, but how do you finance something like London and Tokyo? I mean, it's like, I would love to run in places like that.
How do I do so, what?
How do you finance a trip to Tokyo and London? And or is it, do you have it already planned out in your head? Do you have it ready to go? Or do you, if you win the lottery, do you, are you ready to go to like somewhere London or Tokyo?
Yeah, I mean, if I get in, then there I go, you know.
Wow.
Of course I would go.
No, you know what? I really respect that because I would love to run outside of the country. I mean, because my dad comes from Costa Rica, I want to do their marathon really badly.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
You know, the country I came from. Well, I got some set goals and some things I definitely want to do. I mean, Chicago and Boston and New York are all up there. But, yeah, but in the meantime, I'm still, you know, doing the regular marathons. But then again, I got sponsors, so I got people paying for my runs, which I managed.
Yeah, I've only done majors so far. I like doing the majors. I'm a big fan of having people around. The wine glass marathon is supposed to be really nice, but I know that it doesn't have as many spectators as I'm used to. So if I have the opportunity to just kind of stick with the majors, then I'm probably going to do those.
No, you know what? A crowd really does help. You know, when you see those signs out there and them, you know, cheering you on, even they don't even know you. I mean, a big crowd helps, you know, the motivation.
Yeah, it really does.
And it's like when I was doing the Ultra, there is no motivation. There's just you pushing yourself, which is, you know, it's a different mindset you got to put in your head. But when you're doing a marathon, when there's people cheering you on, it does help. I know that because, I mean, I've experienced it. And the crowds are always, you know, when you see them coming out for their family, it's always great when they, you know, just, you know, how much, you know, devotion there is. I mean, even if it's not directed at you actually, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always a great time, especially, you know, when you're in your home city. Like, I love running New York because you never really know who you're going to see out there and who's going to be cheering for you.
Yeah, I mean, I've started seeing people that I know at these runs, and I've I train so much that people from work, at least 10 different people from work, have seen me run at one time or another around the city. And they're like going, damn, dude, you do that every day? I'm like, yeah, I've told you. That's why I kind of like want to get the hell out of here as soon as I can, so I can get some sleep. But yeah, no, it's kind of, it's nice being recognized as a runner, because I don't like calling myself anything, because I'd rather have someone else call me it than me call myself that. It's just work. So what do you do for your nutrition? I mean, what is one thing that you definitely keep in your diet?
In my diet, I definitely like eggs. I try and eat eggs for breakfast every day. Chicken is pretty much a mainstay for me. Salmon. Otherwise, I get meal boxes, so that's what I make for dinner, whatever comes in those boxes. And then lunch is usually just leftovers from dinner. I like simple meals like Cheez-It snacks. Those are some of my favorite. I'm a little bit more flexible than I used to be. When I'm not training, I try and lay off too much bread because I know that when I start training again, I'm going to have to eat it. But it's always nice to be able to take advantage of, you know, having bagels. So it's one of the one things that I love when I start getting into heavier distance. Is that I know that I can, it's bagels are fair game.
No, I do the same thing. I mean, the one thing I do every day, but just because it's affordable, is I always have a peanut butter sandwich for lunch, but it's kind of like 4 years of peanut butter. I'm actually starting to get tired of it.
I can't eat the same thing every day for that long.
I don't know how I manage it. Work is always a toss-up because they're, you know, it's family meal, whatever the restaurant makes you, and some days it's good and some days it's bad. It's kind of like when it's bad, it's just bad pizza they made, but when it's good, it's like salmon. You know, the good days are like, they made a salmon, thank God. But then when it's bad, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, damn, I wish it was salmon every day, but nope. One of my old jobs I used to complain about, used to make chicken every day. Now I'm kind of missing on chicken we used to get every day because it was chicken, you know, in various ways. But, you know, you don't realize how good it is till it's gone. It's kind of like, I shouldn't have complained about that. It's actually pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
But we're running out of time, and so your next race is the Philly Half Marathon, and no plans for the future, but you're going to keep running, but... And you're interested in Tokyo and London, and I hope you get it because I appreciate goals. So I appreciate that you have big goals, and it's better to have big ones than, like, you know, my tiny ones, you know, because...
I mean, small goals are good, too. I own two businesses. You have to celebrate the small goals. Small goals are not nothing. You should absolutely have both. I happen to like bigger races. I've run New York twice. I've run Chicago twice. So I do want to try the other ones, but I definitely will be putting my name back into New York to see if I get in. Yeah, I don't have plans for next year because I have to wait to see what I get into. I know I'll run right after Philly, not even a week after, is the St. Croix Triathlon. And I ran a relay last year. I was the runner. So I know that I'll do that again to close out the season right before I go into snowboarding and then having some fun. And then towards the end of snowboard season, I'll start picking running back up a little bit more and pick out some fall races.
Oh, nice. I know, I mean, I do the LA Marathon, even though I don't like the course. I just do it because I've been doing it for the last 5 years straight. Don't like the course, but I do it because, you know, it's the LA Marathon. But
yeah, I mean, I definitely have started straying away from that. There are some courses that I was just doing to do because they were here, but then I realized, like, I just genuinely don't like them, and I was paying for them, and I was like, I don't want to do them anymore. So now, really want to run the race, that's the only races I'll do, the ones that I really want to do. Otherwise, I don't load it up with just random races anymore.
Well, that's what I did last year. I tried out all these races. Now I basically crossed out a bunch of them, and I'm keeping the ones I liked, but I'm not doing the ones I didn't like.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly.
I definitely know what you mean. You start, you know, you start exiting races that aren't great, and you don't enjoy it, and you keep doing the races that you like. I mean, I loved, as painful as the Bulldog Ultra was, I want to do it again because the scenery was great, the aid station was great. And the medic, I mean, when my leg seized up for like 10 minutes, the AIDS people, the medics were trying to get me to stop. I didn't stop, but I appreciate their concern, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I appreciate any race where they actually give a shit about the runners. And they were really good about that. And, you know, they kept checking on me as I was running. They, like, checked on me until I got to the end because they wanted to make sure I didn't, you know, hurt myself. But, yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
There's so many aspects to races that people don't understand. That, you know, the aides and the people that come out there to help you and the volunteers, they're all good people. And I didn't realize that till, you know, did the ultra and realized, you know, how helpful everybody was. But yeah.
Yeah,
it's been great
really
having
wonderful.
You on. No, they are, and it's great having you on. I want to have you on if you go to London or Tokyo, or if you get back into New York.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely keep you posted on what I end up doing.
Well, I'm hoping you get London and Tokyo because, I mean, I just respect the fact that you have a chance. If you get it, you'll actually go there and do it, which would be great. You know?
Yeah, I just got global entry, so I'm, like, ready to put some miles on my passport.
Well, there you go. Well, it's been fun having you, and looking forward to hearing from you, like, when you either get into London or when you get to New York. I know you're going to get one of them. Because it just seems like that type of person is going to get there, you know?
I hope so. I hope I get one of them.
No, you will. I got a good sense of people, and I listen to people, how they talk and their tone, and you can tell when someone's serious and when someone's not serious, and you can tell when they really want something when they don't. And you seem to want all these things, so I mean, it's mindset. You're gonna get there because you want it, and you know you're training for it, and you
well,
know,
I'm at the mercy of the lottery. I'm at the mercy of
well,
the
there
lottery.
You go,
it's
but
not
I mean,
really me.
But yeah, but you're gonna be ready for it. You know, most people don't even think. I mean, people sometimes wait till they actually win to actually, you know, get trained and be ready for it, which is kind of silly.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I'm not training for a marathon before I get into it. I'm not insane. I can't do that. If I get in, then I'll train for it. But I'm not just going to, like, I mean, you get in at least 9 months prior to the race, so.
Well, then, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fun talking to you again. And I hope to hear from you again when you get to your next level, which I'm pretty sure you will.
Yeah,
and we've been talking to Lynette, and I do not want to destroy your last name. I know you said it, but I can never say it right.
Yeah, it's cut in a T.
There you go. I mean, it's a great last name, but it actually sounds like,
very,
I mean,
Italian.
It sounds better than most. Yeah, I know it is. And thank you for listening to the Poet Runner Podcast, and next week we'll be back Monday and Tuesday. Thank you for listening.